Today, Trip Davis, architect of The Tribute in The Colony, Texas.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, you'll get inside information on how to lower your scores through strategy and course management. We'll ask course pros, designers, and architects to reveal their secrets in an effort to improve your game. If you're a beginner or a seasoned pro, subscribe to the Golf Smarter podcast. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for joining us. Our podcast today will focus on an interesting course from the designer's perspective as we talk to Trip Davis, architect of the Tribute Golf Club Old Course in The Colony, Texas. Welcome, Trip.
Good to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. Now, you started out as a competitive golfer, but your love has always been in design, right?
Pretty much. When I was a kid, I used to dabble in drawing lines and holes and strategy instead of doing my math homework, and got me in trouble quite a bit, but kind of formed where I am today.
So you've been involved in golf your whole life?
I have. I started playing when I was nine, in and around the Atlanta area, and my whole family was in golf, so was at it at an early age and fell in love with it early.
What was it that intrigued you about the course design?
Well, from really the very first time I played, I was always interested in the fact that, because I played other sports, and you know, and I played football and basketball and ran track and when I was a kid, and you know, those were always played on formal grounds. And with golf, it, you know, every golf course you played was different, and the what led to how the golf course was laid out was something that interested me. It was just intriguing because I was with other sports, I was always thought as somewhat of a cerebral player because I wasn't the biggest guy on either football or basketball, and so I was always having to think my way around, and that's kind of how I took to golf, and that's kind of where my interest in golf course architecture came from.
So you studied golf course architecture?
Well, when I was a kid, yeah, I did. My uncle gave me a book. It was an old book at the time, St. Andrews, or The Spirit of St. Andrews, that Alistair McKenzie had written. I think he found it in an old bookstore somewhere, and started reading that one when I was 12 or 13. And when my parents joined a club in Atlanta called the Farrington Golf Club, which has now gone the wayside of housing development, but they had an area in the foyer to the clubhouse that was a display of Robert Trent Jones Sr., the architect of the golf course, and had his bio, and so that's kind of when I realized that people actually made a living doing that. So I thought that was interesting as well.
That's what I want to do when I grow up.
Yeah.
No, you mentioned that you got a book. I understand you're working on a book too.
I did. I always write fairly lengthy essays to my clients about why we're doing different things, and a few years ago, a couple of them said, you ought to make this into a book, and other different encouragement along the way suggested I do that, and then have a friend who's an agent who also has done some work with getting books published for Butch Harmon and other people, and he said, you know, this is good stuff. You ought to turn it into a book. And so we've been working on it. It's not something that I'm pushing to do. It doesn't get in the way of designing, but it's a good way for me to think about what we're doing. And we're writing it. I'm writing it on the basis of strategy more than anything. It's not going to have anything to do with construction of golf courses, or it's going to have everything to do with the strategic side of the game.
Well, then I'm glad you're here. Because on this podcast, we emphasize strategy over distance.
Right.
And I guess that's what you're going to be doing as well. So you wouldn't disagree with that.
I don't. I think the lengthening of golf courses today is not the answer to the proliferation of technology today. The golf courses that we, you know, like, for instance, the Masters, the Augusta National Golf Course was essentially the same length it was in 1997 when Tiger won his first one as it was when Palmer and Nicklaus were winning their first Masters in the early 60s. So the golf course didn't really change in length. And you know, it. I think Ray Floyd tied Nicklaus's record at Augusta in 1976, and it was 21 years before someone even approached that without a lengthening of the golf course. And you know, I realize that the golf ball has changed quite a bit, and I think there's some things that need to be done in regard to that. But if we cower down to the length factor, we're going to eliminate the strategy of our golf courses. It's going to become more and more of a target contest, less and less of a thinker's game.
Well, that's what I'm going to want to talk to you today about, how you incorporate strategy into your design of a course. And again, I would like to focus on the Tribute.
Well, the Tribute was a really unique opportunity for us, in that the client that we had never done a golf course before.
Wow.
And yet he wanted to do something really unique. And one of the first golf courses that I got a chance, one of the first really old golf courses that I got a chance to see, was the National Golf Links on Long Island. And when I was I think 15 or 16 years old, and was very enamored with what he had done, and I, you know, went on to learn the history of it. And C.B. McDonald was the founder and designer of the golf course, and his dream was to create the ultimate golf course. And he did that by traveling to Scotland and other parts of Europe to find what he thought were ideal holes or ideal features for holes, and that became the basis of the design for the golf course. And so when we came up with the idea for the Tribute, I approached our client and said, you know, this would be something unique. Let's do a golf course that's based on my favorite holes and strategic features from Scotland, and call it the Tribute, as a tribute to the Scottish links courses. And the management company got a hold of that and turned it into more of a replica course, which it's not. But it was a great opportunity for us to turn something, you know, to build a golf course strictly influenced by the great old golf courses and strategy elements from where the game was founded. And when I went and looked at, I spent a little while over in Scotland specifically looking at golf holes, and I wasn't looking for the holes that were the most picturesque or those that had some lineage relative to championship history. I was looking for holes that were the most interesting to me strategically. And so that's how the collection of holes at the Tribute came about. And it's, most of the holes out there, people would probably not recognize. You know, we've got holes from Nairn, where they played the Walker Cup a few years ago, but probably no one's had heard of it before and really have not heard of it since. You know, in different places from Scotland that are kind of off the beaten track, but I found to be great golf holes or had interesting strategic elements. So the Tribute was designed in 1997, 8, and built in 99, opened in 2000. It was somewhat before the golf ball explosion that we saw with the introduction of the Pro V1. But what you find with the old Scottish golf courses, and St. Andrews being one of the most strategic of all, comes down to options. And when you're standing on the tee, a great strategic hole provides the golfer with more than one way to play the hole, specifically around elements where stronger players can take risk, the more cerebral players can take more of an attacking approach to the hole to play it smartly. And so that's what really, when you play the Tribute, that's what you find, is that when you stand on the tee, you're presented with multiple ways of playing the hole. The fairways are very wide, which was very typical of the early Scottish strategy, and the greens offer different ways to get into the green, but the pin location tends to dictate the side of the hole you're going to play. A lot of the modern golf courses you see today, you know, the bunkering is predominantly on the sides of the fairways. You know, you can summarize where to hit it off the tee by saying being on the left or the right, whereas when you go back and play the old Scottish golf courses, you know, it can depend on the day, where the pin is, where the wind's coming from, what you feel like that day. It's very varied.
How did the client react when you came to him with this idea?
Well, again, he didn't know anything about golf. He saw this as the centerpiece for...
Why did he want to do this then?
Well, it's the centerpiece for a development. We're actually in the process of designing the second course right now with Justin Leonard.
And that's going to be on the same site?
Same property, yeah.
Okay.
Actually, a much better site. But the first site, we had 4 feet of fall over 220 acres, and it was consistent. It was a cotton field, and so we moved a lot of dirt. This site is much better. But it's the first course was the centerpiece of what is going to be about a 1,400-acre development. And so when he was looking at this, he said, you know, I've got all this land that's south of me that's on the Army Corps of Engineers property that if I'm going to do two golf courses, I might as well do the first one on that one where I've got no land cost in it. And he was able to pull all the strings together to make it work. So when we approached him about it, one of the other unique elements of this anyway, Fred, is that the site is right on Lake Louisville, which is one of the largest man-made lakes in Texas. And on the right kind of foggy day, you can't see the other side. So it looks kind of like you're on the Firth of Forth in Scotland. So it had a lot of elements to it. There are no trees, so there's, you know, a lot like Scottish Lynx land. And it had a lot of characteristics of what you'd find over there. And I also explained to him that in doing this type of golf course without having to import trees and because the flat nature of the ground was indicative of what we were trying to do, it would cost less. And I think that's really what struck his chord.
A real estate guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, this is near Dallas?
It's just north of Dallas. The Colony and Frisco, Texas are side by side, and it's about 20 minutes from downtown.
All right. Well, I read that Golf Digest named the Tribute as the number one public course in the Dallas area and one of America's 100 greatest public courses for 2005 and 2006. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, that was neat.
Yeah, I would think so. So it is a public course. This is good. And you can walk this course. It's not tough because there's not a lot of elevation changes and things.
Right. It's pretty easy to walk. You just have to make sure you're not there on a July afternoon.
It's Texas. And it's a destination course, or it's more of this real estate community that they're trying to focus on?
Well, you know, up until now, it's been pretty much a destination course. It's interesting, when you go into the entry to the clubhouse, they have a guest book, and they offer people to sign their name and their address, where they're from, and give some comments. And when I get down there, I like to go through and flip through that, and it's amazing where people come from to play. You know, there's people from even Scotland that have come and played. And largely, too, the way that they've marketed the golf course has been for corporate outings. And so they do a lot of corporate play. And the green fee is such that it's a little overpriced in that regard for the Dallas market. But when you're coming from out of town, you know, especially if you've come from a market like you know, California or places on the East Coast, you know, the green fee at the Tribute is a lot less than you typically pay in those areas. So it's it does mostly corporate play and does a lot of destination.
Well, and it's interesting because the way I heard about the course was one of our listeners to the Golf Smarter podcast asked me to do a show about the Tribute. And so in doing research and reading about you, I thought, well, that would be a much more interesting angle instead of just talking to the head pro, but let's talk to you about the course design because it's such a unique idea.
You know, it was just a lot of fun to do. And
did you have to travel a lot to do your research?
I'd been to Scotland twice before we started the project, so I kind of knew what I was looking to do. But we did take a necessary trip as a project expense to Scotland for a couple of weeks, and with a real focused effort on studying the different holes that we were looking for. At that time, we had not done a routing on the golf course. We had quite a bit of property to work with, and so we knew that we'd be able to fit in whatever we wanted to do. And when we were looking at the holes, the real emphasis was finding holes that fit into a sequential routing. We didn't want to do a golf course that was a collection of interesting holes, or, you know, influences of interesting holes or interesting strategic features, and have it be disjunct. So, you know, in that regard, we took influences from some famous holes, not so famous holes, and melded it into what is a really balanced golf course strategically from an enjoyment standpoint. It seems to have worked.
And how did you select where you were going to use for your par threes, your par fours, and your par fives?
Just partly from just getting around. I think in the 2 weeks I was there, we played golf four or five times, but I saw probably 40 golf courses while we were there. And a lot of times it just, you know, something struck me as being particularly interesting. Like there's a par three, the fourth hole at Moray Golf Club in northeast Scotland is a very obscure course, but it's very well done golf course. And the fourth hole there is one of the neatest par threes you'll ever see. And the basis of our eighth hole is the fourth at Moray. And so when I was going around, I was looking, you know, what is just particularly interesting to me. And in that regard, we were, you know, we were also looking at trying to create as much variety in the holes as well. So, you know, I probably looked and took notes on probably 20 different par threes, 30 different par threes, and tried to get them to where there was some variety in length, some variety in orientation, some variety in strategy, and just went from there. The holes that we have, the par threes we have there, you know, the fourth from Moray is our eighth hole. The fifth hole at the Tribute is the eighth hole from, or is influenced by the eighth hole at Troon, the postage stamp. The 11th hole was influenced by the Eden hole at St. Andrews, which I think is a great par three.
You know, what we like to do here is take a shot-by-shot guide of some of these holes. So let's take a short break. We'll come back. Let's pick a couple holes and walk us through shot-by-shot how to play some of these holes.
Okay.
As we make the turn, we want you to know that we're taking requests. If you'd like us to feature a specific course on Golf Smarter, our email address is golfsmarter@ttour.com. That's golfsmarter, one word, at TEETOUR.com. Whether you're planning a golf vacation, playing in an upcoming tournament, or have a favorite course for which you have a question, please let us know and we'll do a show just for you. Again, here's your host for Golf Smarter, Fred Green.
All right, and we're back here with Trip Davis talking about the Tribute Golf Club. And if you want to follow along with us while you're listening, you can go to thetributegolflinks.nemexinc.com, nemexinc.com. So you can click on a hole and get a nice photograph from above looking down the fairway. So, Trip, let's pick three holes or so and walk us through it. Which one would you like to start with?
Well, I think the third hole is one of the more interesting holes, especially from a strategy standpoint. It's a par five that plays due north, and so when the wind's out of the south, for the better players and even some of the players of more average length, that it's reachable in two because the golf course was designed to play very hard and fast. There's quite a bit of drainage to make that happen, and the third hole is one that was influenced by the sixth hole at Carnoustie in Scotland, where they played the Open Championship. I think it was in 99 was the last time they played it there. But it's called Hogan's Alley, and it was, the reason it's called that is because there's two bunkers in the middle of the fairway, and down the left side of the fairway there's a small sliver just left of the bunkers that's about 20 yards wide, and there's out of bounds just left of that. And when Hogan won the British Open there in 1953, he thread the needle down the left-hand side, which shortens the hole, and you get more run out down the left-hand side, and he was able to play the hole four under par for the week, and that was the main difference in his winning the tournament. And so you, when you're standing on the tee, you have really three different options. You can try to thread it down the left, which, you know, shortens the hole slightly because of the run out. It gives you a better angle into most of the pins on the green, either if you're going to go for it in two or if you're going to lay it up. It provides you a better layup angle to get to those pins. Second option is really to go right of those bunkers. Now, there's more fairway over there, but there's also a bunker down the right that if you play down the right, you really are eliminating the chance of going for the green two. But it's a little bit safer tee shot because there's no out-of-bounds to the right. As a matter of fact, at Carnoustie, the fifth hole comes back the other way, and at our hole, the second hole comes back the other way. So you can hit it miles right and still have a shot, but it's a much more difficult layup from over there. And the third option is really to avoid the bunkers altogether, play short, and leave yourself a longer layup, but you're taking the bunkers out of play off the tee. And with your layup shot, the green is such that there's three bunkers on the inside right of the green, and there's a small pot bunker on the left. And the green is really oriented from front left to back right. It angles at about a 45-degree angle that way. And so when you're laying your second shot up, there's still a good bit of room. But if the pin's back right and you don't get your layup far enough left, you really cannot go at those back pins. There's just not enough room over there to carry the front bunkers and then stop it before you get to the back, especially when it's downwind like it typically plays. The green itself has a lot of contours that impact that as well. If you're kind of slopes from left to right for the most part, and so if the pin's in the back right, you can use that contour. Now, if the pin's in the top left, the left side bunker is really not in play for a lot of locations where you lay up, but you're much better off down the right-hand side when the pin's left, simply because you're hitting back up the contours of the green, and you've got more room in front to land it short and let it release. So it's, you know, from a strategy standpoint, it's a hole where you've got three different distinct options off the tee. Your layup is really driven by where the pin is, and once you get on the green, you really want to leave yourself under the hole. When the pin's back left, you want to make sure you end up a little short. When the pin is in the right side, you want to make sure you get it to at least pin high, because from the middle of the green to the back right portion of the green slopes downward, and when the greens are quick, it's a really tough putt.
Well, I'm sitting here looking at the photograph as you're describing it, and I can see that. So if I'm playing the second set, I don't play the championship tees. So now this hole's 532, according to this. How far of a drive do I need to get to those two bunkers in the middle of the fairway?
Well, from the middle tee, you're looking at approximately a 240-yard carry over those bunkers.
Oh, okay.
Down the left-hand side, you know, you still have the same angle. And then the bunker on the right, I think, is probably at 250 from those tees.
It's a good photograph because it's not at eye level. It's looking down on it, which is nice. But also, if you're listening to the Golf Smarter podcast and you have Google Earth going, which is one of our new features, that you can climb right into the tee box itself on Google Earth and look at the hole from the satellite photo. It's pretty remarkable.
Hmm.
Yeah, we're just starting to do that. It's a very cool feature. Google Earth is, you know, a satellite image looking down, but you can angle it so it looks like you're standing on the tee box, and you can look right down the fairway as it's being described.
Wow.
Yeah. Check out teetour.com, and there's information on how to get to the Google Earth golf courses that we do on the Golf Smarter. Okay, so what other hole you want to do? Let's do another one. That was fun.
The seventh hole is one of my other favorite strategic holes. It's the longest par four at the Tribute. It also plays downwind typically, but it's a slight dogleg left. From your second shot to the green, there's an elevation change of around 20 feet. Plays uphill. For Texas, that's substantial. there are bunkers on the inside of the hole at the landing area. And really, you know, because of the slight angle, the slight dog leg, the closer you can stay to those bunkers, the shorter club you're going to hit into the green, the better chance you have at getting at the flags. The green has enough contour in it that if you can hit a shorter club in, you're doing much better in terms of trying to get to those pockets of pin locations that are up there. And the further right you go, the fairway's huge. It's hard to hit it too far right. The further right you go, the longer the shot gets and the worse the angle will typically get. If the pin is back left, it's a little bit better angle from the right side, but still if you stay down the right versus staying down the left, you're adding 20 yards to the hole, and on a hole that is as long as that one is, adding that 20 yards really changes the way you're going to approach the shot. So when the pins are back right, staying down the left gives you a better angle, shorter shot as well. But if you hit it in the two bunkers, either one of the two bunkers that are down the left, you're pretty much precluded from being able to reach the green. So it's a very risk-reward type of hole off the tee. It's also a very, I like to think of risk-reward sometimes in this way, in that if you have a risk to be able to reap reward, if you then have an area that is a no risk at all, that even accentuates the risk reward portion of it. I often see holes described as risk reward where, you know, the only shot is to hit the risky shot, and you know that's not really risk reward style of design. And I think the more room you provide to the safe side, which also then provides either a longer shot or worse angle, the more difficult it is on the player mentally to be able to execute and commit to executing the riskier shot, because they don't have to. That's one of the things that I see with a lot of modern design that we need to get away from, is defining the shot that the player is going to play. If it's laid out in front of them, that, you know, this is the shot you need to play, and it's very distinct, and there's really no other option, it's a lot easier to mentally commit to that, and it's not as much fun in the long run because you're not having to think; you're just having to execute. So the seventh hole is a huge green too. So you know you have the options of if the pin's in the front, you've got plenty of room to play behind it, but you leave yourself tough putts coming back down the hill. If the pins are in the back, you've got plenty of room to leave it short, leaving the same difficulties. And either trying to get close to either front pins or back pins leave you with some risk, and the bunkers on the front left, the small bunker on the right, and then the tall grasses at the back of the green.
And a little mound in the back of the green. This photograph is looking from the green towards the tee boxes.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty well encapsulated in there, but you don't want to get the ball long because then you're chipping out of fairly tall buffalo grass, which is our version of heather,
okay,
back to a green that runs away from you.
And what is number seven? What is this a tribute to?
It's the it's a hole at the Ailes of Course. I think it was the fifth hole at the Ailes of Course at Turnberry. And the thing that really struck me about that hole when I this is one of the courses I played that I'd never seen before when we went over for our study of the courses, and it just it struck me how it was, one, a beautiful hole, but two, how many just variable options it had. You know, the closer you got to the bunkers, the better your angle was, and the further you got right, it progressively got worse and worse and worse, and you got further and further away. You know, a lot of times you see these holes where you get it closer to the bunkers and it gives you a little better angle, but you know, if you're 15, 20 yards right, it's not that worse of an angle or a shot. On this hole, you know, every 5 yards right you go of those bunkers, the longer the shot gets, the worse the angle gets, the more difficult it gets, and it's unique in that way. That's what really stood out to me.
Awesome. I really like that. All right, let's do one more. We got some time left. Let's pick one more hole that...
I tell you, the 15th, the par 5, I think is one of the best par 5s in the world. It's a... it's from Western Gales, which is next door to Troon. Most people probably never heard of Western Gales because of Troon. But it's a very good little golf course. Matter of fact, Pete Dye, I met him not long after going over there, and he asked me if I got to see Western Gales, and I did, and he said that that and Prestwick were his two biggest influences. And the 15th at the Tribute, I think, is the 14th at Western Gales in terms of, you know, the where we got the influence from. And this is a hole where, as with the other holes we just described, we took some liberties in that we didn't copy the holes exactly. We knew that we were adapting the game to an American site, to a different environment, and plus, you know, as good as these holes are, they're not without their imperfections, and so we tried to perfect them in little ways as we could. But the par five. That turned out to be our 15th hole at the Tribute is off the tee. You've got, again, multiple options, and it's not unusual that I picked two par fives as holes that I thought had great strategy, because I think they typically offer the most variety. And this particular par five, you have an opportunity. There's two bunkers down the right-hand side. They're kind of looking at you. They're almost like spectacle bunkers that you'd find at Carnoustie, or that name's kind of been used elsewhere as well. But you have the opportunity to either lay up short of those. There's a bunker down the left as well that's just past the spectacles. But you can lay up short of all of that and take any risk out of that. The fairway's fairly wide. The only real trouble's down the right-hand side. Or you can try to carry those bunkers. Or you can try to thread the needle between the bunker on the left and the two spectacles on the right. Really, it depends on where the pin is, where the wind's coming from, as to whether or not it's better to try to fly the bunkers or to thread the needle, or even to do neither and just lay up short. Once you get off the tee, your second shot you're looking at, you've got two bunkers on the left that really shouldn't come into play, because what they do is visually, focal, in my opinion, they push your eye to the right, to the string of three bunkers that are down the right-hand side that progressively move into the fairway. And it's almost like staging points with each of those bunkers when you're choosing the layup. The further you go down the fairway to get a shorter shot, the more difficult it becomes, because those bunkers increasingly sneak in.
Do you use bunkers as illusions?
Yes. I'm not a huge fan of it. I think it's overdone at times to use bunkers as visual elements, but I think they also are very good at moving your eye around. You know, Donald Ross and Perry Maxwell are two of my favorite architects that were very utilitarian in the way they use bunkers, but both of them were very good at using bunkers to make a hole or a shot look different and feel different than it actually was. You know, it's that's one of the hidden ways that golf course architects, when they're at their best, I think, make the game interesting, in that you can stand over a shot and it feels a certain way. I mean, the ball's below your feet, the wind's coming off the left, you know, everything indicates a fade. And a good architect will then create a shot where you really should be hitting a draw. So it looks and feels, you know, it feels one way, but it looks another way. And you can use bunkers in that way to create illusions, to where you move your eye to a spot that feels different. And because golf is all about feel. When you stand on a tee, you're always hearing the tour players saying this: the golf course just fit my eye. Well, I think a golf course architect's job in a lot of ways is to not make it fit your eye. You know, that's what part of the challenge is to develop the commitment, which comes through feel, which comes through establishing a frame for the shot that you're going to hit. And the more difficult we can make that, the more challenging we make the golf course. So that's, you know, part of what happens with the 15th at the Tribute, is that the bunkers make it difficult to really establish a good feel for the shot you're going to hit. And you have to be very committed to the line you want to take. You have to be very committed to the distance you want to hit the ball. And you really have to kind of block out everything else that's going on around you. The green itself is relatively subdued for most of the greens at the Tribute, but there's two real critical elements in that green that are interesting in that there's this very subtle spine that runs up the middle of the green. So if the pin's on the left and you're on the right, you're putting up and then down, and it's very hard to distinguish. And I don't know how many times I've played that hole with friends, and they'll knock it 4 feet by and say, you know, this green's faster.
You start yelling at the architect at that point.
Yeah. And then the back of the green has a very small hump in the middle of the green that feeds balls to the left and to the right. It's almost hard to see. You know, it's very hard to see. But when you're hitting shots in there, you can, especially when the pin's back left, you can use that instead of having to carry the two bunkers on the left. You can use that to feed the ball back there, and just a great hole.
I love getting your perspective on this. And we don't talk to when we talk to course pros, we talk more about, you know, the green size, things like this. But the idea of how it's designed and looking at it that way is really fascinating. I appreciate your time.
You bet.
This has been great. Quickly, how about the practice facilities there before you go out? Do you have a good chance to get some shots in and do some practice putting before you start playing?
Yeah, the driving range there was designed for 36 holes.
Okay.
It's huge, and it's one of the best tee surfaces in Texas. I love hitting balls there, especially because of the way it sits. It sits at slightly a southeastern direction, so you're always hitting into a right-to-left wind.
And is that important for that course?
It's important for golf, I think. You know, when you're practicing, it's not a good idea to hit balls into a left or right wind if you're a right-handed golfer, because it encourages you to come over the top of the ball. We always try to set our driving ranges such that there's a slight right-to-left wind on a typical day. So that's one neat thing there. They've got a really big short game area off to the left of the practice tee, and putting green sets out right behind the pro shop. It's kind of neat on a late afternoon. You can stand there, and they have a clock tower at the top of the clubhouse that lights up at night, and you can be out there at dusk, and it starts to light up, and it's kind of cool.
Very cool. And do the practice putting greens that represent the greens out on the course?
Yeah.
So if you get a good amount of time practicing there, you'll have a good feel when you walk out.
Yeah.
Good.
Phil Kemmer, the superintendent there, does an excellent job. And golf course is always in very good condition.
Good. Well, you know, getting to talk to an architect is not easy because they're always on the move.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling you're not in your office right now.
No, I'm in Pittsburgh.
I'm sorry.
We're doing, we're doing a project for the Pittsburgh Field Club. It's one of the oldest clubs in the country, and they were the co-host site of the 2003 U.S. Amateur, and they brought us in to do a little work on the 18th hole and do some other stuff. But the traveling sometimes can get a little old, but
That means you're working.
Yeah, that's good.
That's the good part.
Yeah.
Do you prefer doing courses starting from an empty slate, or do you like to do refurbishing of courses?
I like to do. I like working on old historical courses, and I like working on the original designs we do. I'm not all caught up in the site we have to work with or how much money we have to work with. I like working with people that have a passion for the game.
Oh, that's nice.
That understand the game, and that's what makes it fun. If you can work on the greatest site in the world with the biggest budget in the world, and you have a client who's impossible and doesn't really care about the game, it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
In balance, we do less new courses, largely because it takes a lot more time. But I love doing work on old historical courses. It's just, it's a lot of fun to learn the history. It's a great look at, old stuff that it can influence us on the original stuff we're doing, too.
You're like an old master craftsman.
Yeah.
So was this a fun course to work on? The Tribute?
The Pittsburgh Field Club?
No, the Tribute.
Oh, it was outstanding, yeah. I mean, it was, I was given the opportunity to go look at the foundation of strategic golf architecture and implement it in a golf course with no holes barred.
Wow.
That's about as good as it gets.
Well, I think we should work together and do a video for this golf course.
It'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's.
I'd love to have you narrate it too. I mean, it just the intimacy is so great.
They're great people to work with. The clients are great, and you know, if you can show them it's worth doing, they would. I'm sure you'd have a lot of fun doing it. We would.
Well, then we'll talk about that more. I don't think we need to include everybody in this conversation.
Yes.
Unless you want to raise your hand and if you have a question. All right, Tripp. Well, thanks so much for spending this time with us. It's a little longer than we usually go, but I think it was well worth it. We've got a lot of information that you can take to any golf course that you play. And that's important information to have any time you play golf.
Well, it's fun to be with you.
Thanks so much, bud. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay.
And that's Tripp Davis, architect for the Tribute in The Colony, Texas. Thanks so much for joining us today. If you have any comments, please email us at golfsmarter@ttour.com. And also, let your friends know about Golf Smarter. Tell them that you're learning something. Tell them that you're not learning something, but tell them anything about the Golf Smarter podcast, because we appreciate all the feedback that we do get. And we hope to hear from you and your friends. If you have a course that you want to play, we'd like to know about it. Thanks for joining us. I'm Fred Green.